Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're gonna get Amin in those, so you gotta listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another episode of Growing Up the Same. I'm your host, Trevon Edwards, and I'm joined always by my co-host, Jason Madison. What's going on, Jason?
Chilling, man. How you doing, Trey?
I'm blessed, man, and grateful. And today we have a special guest, Josh Childress. What's going on, man?
What's going on, brother? How you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
Joshua Childress is an American former professional basketball player, an All-EuroLeague second team member in 2010. He played with the Atlanta Hawks, Phoenix Suns, Brooklyn Nets, and New Orleans Pelicans in the NBA, as well as the Greek Basketball League and the EuroLeague. Josh, this is the one of the two. Are you ready?
I'm ready. That's good.
City of LA or City of Compton?
City of Compton, man.
Oakland or San Francisco?
Oakland.
Pizza My Heart or Pizza Hut?
Pizza My Heart.
Bill Gates or Steve Jobs?
Steve Jobs.
Mark Zuckerberg or Jack Dorsey?
Oh, I'll go with Dorsey.
Centennial or Dominguez?
Dominguez.
Trey or Luca?
Luca.
Lonzo or LaMelo?
LaMelo.
The microwave or the oven?
Oven.
Sports car or SUV?
Sports car.
Atlanta or New Orleans?
Atlanta.
Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock?
Chappelle, all day.
Being hood or being rich?
Being rich.
Rock music or country music?
Country.
Jay-Z or Tupac?
Tupac.
Snoop or Biggie?
I'm a Biggie fan.
Lil Wayne or Kanye?
Are we talking like old versions?
Yeah, either old or new, whichever you want.
Old versions, I rock with Kanye.
Living in a dorm or living with your parents?
Dorm.
Beamer or Benz?
Benz.
Hulk Hogan or Bret the Hitman Hart?
Hitman.
Jordan 1 or Dunks?
Jordan 1.
Supreme SBs or Tiffany SBs?
Tiffany SBs.
Iverson Reebok or Kobe Adidas?
Iverson Reebok.
Griffey or Deion?
Deion.
Bo Jackson or Jerry Rice?
Jerry Rice.
Will Smith or Jamie Foxx?
Will Smith.
Will Ferrell or Adam Sandler?
Adam Sandler, because he likes to hoop.
Frosted Flakes or Cheerios?
Frosted Flakes.
Surf or turf?
Turf.
Jeopardy or Legends of the Hidden Temple?
Jeopardy.
Soul food or This Christmas?
Soul food.
Elf or The Grinch?
Elf.
Vegas Vacation or Christmas Vacation?
Say what?
Vegas Vacation, the movie, or Christmas Vacation?
Vegas Vacation.
Kazam or Uncle Drew?
Uncle Drew.
Lil Penny or Grandma Ma?
Ooh, Lil Penny all day.
Personal accolades or team awards?
Team awards.
Hanging out with rappers or athletes?
Athletes.
Young Thug or Travis Scott?
Travis Scott.
Club night in Atlanta or Airbnb house party in LA?
House party.
Beach House or House on the Hills?
House on the Hills.
Respect and longevity or money and fame?
Respect and longevity.
Cancel student loan debt or release all nonviolent offenders?
Ooh, that's a good one. Release all nonviolent offenders.
Stock market or cryptocurrency?
Damn. Both are hitting right now, too. I say stock market.
Europe or Australia?
Australia.
Finishing a good book or finding a good restaurant?
Good restaurant all day.
Changing someone's life or bettering yourself?
Changing someone's life.
Morning person or night person?
Night person.
Your 20s or your 30s?
Oh. Damn. 30s.
And the last one, what do you
think? 20s was fun, dog. I can't lie. But
what do you think is more important, housing or education?
I'd say housing, but I mean, education could lead to housing. So it's kind of a tough one. But it reminds me of that Kanye skit where you talk about, you know, you can't pass his degrees down to his son or to his kid. So it's like, so in that regard, I'd say housing.
Yeah, for sure. That was the one of the two. And interestingly enough, I picked that skit for the album. Yeah, yeah.
Those are some good ones. Those are some really good ones.
Yep.
Yeah, he's the goat at this or that. I think people should pay him for that. So we discussed some topics, and I have some here. I'm going to randomize them a little bit. What's the importance of reading to young Josh?
Importance of reading is of the utmost importance, really, because, you know, it educates your mind, it stimulates your mind, but it also allows you to experience things that you necessarily won't experience in real life, right? And so when you think about from a children's perspective, providing opportunities for them to be creative, be imaginative, see themselves in a character, you know, that they don't necessarily see on TV or otherwise, you know, reading is super important in kind of cultivating that mentality. So, you know, it was something that was important to me as a kid, and, you know, was a foundation for my life, you know, moving forward. So I think it's super important.
What book got you like pretty much made you fall in love with reading at an early age?
Oh man, it's taking me back. I think it was the books that we read in school, like Lord of the Flies, you know, and stuff like that. You know, the one book that I remember, I had to do a book report on an individual. So I had to read his book, and I can't remember the name of the book, but it was on Ben Carson. And he was the first black neurosurgeon. And, you know, he became really famous for separating Siamese twins that were conjoined at their head. And that, for the next few years, I wanted to be a neurosurgeon, right? And so that completely shifted my mentality towards, you know, my future, you know, based on seeing a person that looked like me that was able to achieve, you know, such high accolades and, you know, and change lives. And I'll remember the name of the book eventually, but, you know, that book.
It's called Gifted Hands.
Gifted Hands. Yep. And that book was a catalyst for me to, you know, really want more for myself and not essentially be trapped in, you know, what I see around me.
Man, that representation matters, especially in that situation. Now, since it's a book and you only had the cover and probably maybe a few images in there, ideally, what made you do a career shift or as far as not follow the path of a neurosurgeon after, like moving forward growing up as a teenager?
Yeah, I grew to be 6'7", and it was, you know, at that time I was, you know, I don't know, I was probably like 5'8" or something, and you know, you continue to grow in your body. You know, you have a little success, And, you know, you start to really come into your own as a person, understand your likes and dislikes. And, you know, that was a big part of it, you know, because then from there I shifted to wanting to be a forensic scientist. I saw a movie that I really loved. And, you know, and then that progressed into the hoop stuff.
Who would have been that Ben Carson would have came the coon that he is today?
Oh, I'm so disappointed. But
now, I remember I read that book too, like back in the day, and I was like, oh shit, like you said, like, damn, I could become a neuroscientist or something. Like,
yeah,
what was the movie that you saw that made you want to get into forensics?
Bone Collector.
I thought that was it.
Yeah,
I guess it. I love that movie.
Yeah. Great movie.
That plays what Lincoln something. Is his name, but yeah, him and Angelina Jolie. And I just rewatched it and I forgot that Queen Latifah was his nurse in the movie. Mm-hmm. I was like, damn, this movie had a gang of people in it.
Yep. Man, I saw that. I was like, man, this is dope. You know, and then obviously since then, all the CSI and, you know, all those shows, you know, are really cool. But I took that on and thought that it was just cool that he could, you know, kind of retrace steps, you know, and utilize his mind to solve, you know, solve crimes and help people. So,
man, y'all gonna make me go watch that. It's been a long time.
It's
been a long time. I ain't seen that movie in a long time. I'm not even gonna lie to you.
It's like, it's on par with like Seven or any of those, like Psych or even like Silence of the Lambs. It's not that good, but like, it's up there, and it's Denzel, man.
Yeah, it's respectable. It's one of his good works. I mean, that, you know, with him, with Josh wanting to be, you know, forensic scientist and, you know, neurosurgeon, I think back to, like, me wanting to be an architecture, right? Yeah, but the thing was, because I was building crazy Legos, and I didn't even know the difference. The crazy thing about it, I was mixing up. I was so young in age, probably like 6 or 7. I was mixing up artists and architecture. So, like, a lot of people would ask me what I wanted to be. I was like, I want to be an artist. And they're like, well, you know, artists don't get paid that much. And this is when they was telling me that. So it was like super discouraging, like I was wasting my time or something. Right. So, like, I'm building all these like different buildings. I remember I built the Compton Courthouse building, but I didn't have it. It wasn't all white. It wasn't anything like that. I just built it up. And then when I started going to Compton and I got a chance to look at it and how it was designed, and I remember they took us to a field trip, dude. At Compton High, I took us a field trip to the courthouse building. I'm like, yo, how many stories is this? They're like, it's 10. And I noticed that it was the tallest building in our city, which, you know, most people go to court there, or, you know, it's just a bunch of stuff that's going on there. So, you know, after finding that out, and then finding sports, you know, that was just a different segue into life, just kind of, you know, shifting my path of what career I wanted to actually do. Cause we as kids, you know, you constantly change. And Josh mentioned that, you know, there was two that probably was like not the normal for a kid in Compton. You know what I mean? You say like, oh, I want to be somebody, your homie across the street probably gonna be like, what is that? Or you can't be that. You know what I mean? Cause ideally we don't see that every day, you know? So I know before we get to the basketball part, tell us about video games. What was your connection with video games?
Man, we used to just have epic Mario Kart battles like for extended periods of time. And then, you know, I just remember at an early age watching my older brothers play video games, and, you know, back when it was like Contra and you know, Mike Tyson Punch Out, and we used to sit there just hoping they would, you know, beat Ball Bull and Mike Tyson. And it was just, you know, just fond memories, you know. And that's obviously, you know, continued throughout my adulthood. I mean, I still play, you know, video games here and there, and, you know, get on Call of Duty when I can, when I got a little time. And, I don't know. It's a way to, you know, spend constructive time just doing something that you enjoy, you know, and I've always felt that way. Obviously there's a balance that needs to be had, but, you know, it's just something that brings me enjoyment. And I appreciate, you know, the community that it builds. I remember when I first got drafted, you know, we had like a cool little, you know, draft party or whatever, and then get back home to Cali, and we had like an 8-person Halo tournament. And it was just one of those things, like, man, I can't wait. You know, I can get
was back. This Halo 1?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Halo 1's amazing. I literally brought up Halo 1. That was like one of the craziest games, dude. Like probably after Halo 2, I tapped out.
Yeah.
Because it just got, you know, you just had too much access to driving the rovers, to doing all this other stuff, to, you know, different things. But Halo 1, man, oh my God. That controller was huge, but like the impact it had, man, like playing four players with the homies, like just being able to, you know, throw the bomb and a stick on them. Hey, it was no better feeling than that, man. Like for real.
Yeah.
So you got a chance to be the cover boy of NCAA 2K5. What was that like?
It was dope. You know, I never played that series mm-hmm. before the game, but you know, to go from Stanford to then, you know, I'm doing this photo shoot. I pull up. And Ben Wallace was the cover athlete for the NBA version. And so, you know, we pull up to the spot at the same time. We do our motion capture stuff, you know, and all that. And it was like my first foray into the league, right? You know, Ben pulls up in his limo. I don't know. I can't remember what I put up in. But, you know, here's Ben. And, you know, we both got the fro rocking it and you know, just in there doing our thing. So it was a cool feeling. And then now, you know, to have copies of that, I can show my kids. You know, it's just dope. It's dope.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, like, you know, you were definitely famous for your hair, as was Ben.
Yeah.
Like, what made you keep it for so long? I mean, like, just adopt that hairstyle.
Yeah, so I grew my hair out. I don't know if you remember Jamal Sampson.
Jamal Sampson, yeah.
Patrick Bozeman.
Modern day.
And so, you know, we all grew our hair out together. And it was just like, this is our thing. You know, we play on the same AAU team. You know, we were all talking about going to the same school, you know, and it was just kind of like package deal that we were trying to put together. Me, Sam, Sid, and Tyson. Tyson ended up going to the league, obviously. And then, you know, we just kind of went into college. Sam ended up getting his braided. Sid eventually cut his, but it just kind of became a part of me. It became my identity, a part of my identity rather. And I just roll with it, kept it. I always had, you know, bigger ears. So I was like, all right, this is a cool way for me to cover the ears. And yeah, just kept it for years, man. Then eventually it just got to the point where it's like, all right, it's time.
I never knew the backstory on that. And I'm glad Jason asked that, because that was going to be one of my questions. I remember, you know, seeing you with the fro, all right, as a SoCal kid and basketball player. And I would say you and Wesley Stokes were one of the, like, two of the influential players with the afro. Like, obviously, Wes is used to just drape down. It got to a point where it was almost lion mane, you know, and it would bounce, you know, and yours was, like, picked really neatly. And, you know, it got, like, you shaped it out real nice. And, you know, I would see you, you know, as a ninth grader, you know, in the Press Telegram, you know, dribbling in the latest shoes, just in the Mayfair jersey. For my listeners who don't know, Mayfair is located in Lakewood, California. For the younger listeners, Josh Christopher went there. But before Josh Christopher, there was a Josh Childress. And how do you say Edwin's last name?
Drawn.
Drawn. Okay. Edwin Drawn. Yeah. And you guys, Edwin went to Ivy League, right? He went to Princeton?
Ed went to Yale.
Yale, okay. Yep. And that was – those were, you know what I mean, Stanford and Yale, that was a big deal, man. Like, especially – I think that was the representation for me that, like, although you guys were, you know, highly touted, recruited guys, you know, and hooped and looked cool out there, you guys still chose, like, higher education schools, you know? What made you choose Stanford?
Yeah, so backstory on how me and Ed, you know, we competed at everything. We were, you know, and we'd be at his house after school. We'd be playing 007, you know, go back to video games, right?
That's a great game.
Yeah, great game. But we competed at everything, and so that carried over into the classroom. So, you know, we making sure that, you know, we're trying to get the best grades possible and going that route. And that really kind of drove us to be our better selves, you know, in the classroom. And I ended up choosing Stanford, really, because it was just the best fit for me. You know, I would say at one point I was leaning towards Carolina. They had a coaching change, and then they signed the other kind of top small forward in the country at the time was Jawad Williams. So I ended up signing Jawad. So that took them off the table. And then it was like, all right, well, it's Kansas, Stanford, Arizona, and, you know, maybe UCLA. So I went through all that, and I was like, all right, where can I go? I can grow and develop as a player. I feel like I fit in from the culture of the school, you know, and I can kind of just grow as a person. And I kind of did that analysis, you know, individually, and felt like Stanford was the best spot for that. And so that was the biggest factor. The hoop stuff would take care of itself, but, you know, where can I cultivate and grow as a person and set myself up, you know, to be a better man?
Yeah. How did you like living in Palo Alto as opposed to, you know, being in LA? Because I went to Stanford for like a few weeks when I was like younger, a part of this program, and it was like a real eye-opening experience for me, because I was like, at the time I was living with my grandmother in Compton, so I kind of had like a very short-term like experience, kind of how you did when I was younger, and it was like really dope. Like, I had never seen the trees and all that, and they got the black squirrels and all this stuff. Like, how was that for you?
It was dope because it was different than what I was used to. But, you know, you just step on campus and you just feel opportunity, right? And it's alive on campus. There's a sense of entrepreneurship. You know, you could be sitting in class next to, you know, the king of England's son, and you wouldn't know it. And you got this Google president's kid here. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times, you know, now since I've gotten older, you know, I'll talk to somebody who's a super successful business person, and you know, they were just the fans in the arena back in the, you know, in the stadium back in the day, and like that's what that place is. It's just a special place, and you know, so it was definitely a culture shock. I'm coming on campus, in freaking 5X tall Sean John, you know, sweatsuits, and you know, I'm bringing my Air Force Ones out and all this, and you know, everybody's in Birkenstocks and, you know, like cargo shorts.
Were you the only person who looked like you, like clothing wise and all that, coming like up there?
I mean, I had a couple of teammates, football players, obviously. And then there's actually a couple other people from SoCal that went up. But, you know, we'd be in the middle of the parties dancing, and, you know, everybody's looking around like, what is this? What is this rhythm I see? Like,
yo, so you used to get, you know, in high school, you and a couple other players used to get sneakers early. Like, I'm talking about almost the same timetable as pro players. And I mentioned earlier before we started recording that you had the cool gray 11s before they came out. And it was only a few people that had those. But you had y'all had a bunch of shoes, honestly. I know in college you wore more team shoes or less, like, I know you played in the Jordan 18. Mm-hmm. What made you go away from playing in more of the popular style shoe?
Our coaches.
Coaches, okay.
They didn't, yeah.
So Montgomery wasn't really on that.
And even the Jordans I played in, I broke my foot that season, like preseason. Mm-hmm. And so Jordans have that they're a little bit more firm. They have that plastic plate in them from when he broke his foot. And so that was my only way that I was able to get him to convince him to let me wear Jordans. But they were team shoe all the way. But yeah, I mean, in high school, man, I was always a sneakerhead and, you know, loved it. And I remember the first day I got those cool grays. And I think I got them maybe like 4 months early.
Oh, no, it was ridiculous. It came out,
unheard of, right?
It came out in March. You had them in October, dude. Like, I remember the first time, I didn't know how that really worked. Obviously, you know, y'all were SEA guys and different, you know, associations with the brands. And when the brands would come, like, I remember being at Dominguez and watching Tyson get Flyposite one, you know what I mean? It was some, like, the Vindicates, the Vin Bakers, like, mm-hmm. just different shoes with the colorways that you just don't see. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So for y'all to just even have like a Flyposite 2 with like cool, with the graphite colorway, just different stuff. You know, what was probably one of the, outside of the cool grays, what was one of the outside, like, coolest shoes that you received early?
Another one, I think I received the Jordan 14s early. I want to say
the candy cane, white rat.
Nah, the black toe.
Okay.
I can't remember.
I had the 16s early.
See, you.
I had the 16s early, and I had the Olympic BB4 shocks. So when everybody had the white and reds, I had the white and navy.
Yeah, nice. Yeah,
that was cool.
I got two questions real quick. As a non-hooper, I gotta ask you all this. So, like, for one, I didn't know the coaches decide what shoes y'all can wear. And then two, like, what is the setup? Because I used to, like, always be around a basketball team, and it was, like, really good players. But what is the setup for y'all getting shoes in high school? Like, does somebody from Nike contact you? Like, what? How does that work?
I'll let Josh answer that one because he got way more shoes than me. I play for AAU clubs, but he was an extremely better player than me, so go for it.
All right, I'll answer that part first. So we were a Nike team. And so Nike provided us with gear. And then, you know, we had a couple of tournaments up in Portland you know, would develop relationships with some of the sneaker guys up there. And so, you know, when they got stuff that they could send out early, they would send it to our team. You know, it's just kind of part of our team's package or whatever. And it just so happened that they just sent us those. And like, I remember, I thought they were fake. I was like, I've never seen this shoe before.
Listen, you wore them before Mike. You don't even understand that. I'm no bullshit. You wore them before Mike because we knew that he was going to be a Wizard, but he wasn't wearing shit yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And y'all had them. So like me seeing them, I was like, oh my God, that suede and then the patent leather, then the white with the, come on, quit playing with me with the white laces.
And I tell you what, I wore them things everywhere. Just to people be like, damn, where'd you get, what are those? I never seen them. I mean, like every tournament, anytime I wanted to go
So my question, since you were elite in this situation, were there times where you hooped in them and then you wore them with gear?
Never hooped in them.
Oh, never.
Every other instance I wore them, but never touched.
Because I was the king of, like, I would get them. I got cool with most of the sneaker shops around. So when I know we had a game, I was gonna debut them. It depends who we play. Like, I was in a Moore League, so I'd be like, oh, we about to play Poly. I'm gonna wear the True Blues before, or I'm gonna wear the Cool Gray Nines, or whatever it was. I remember breaking out Olive 9 and the Ginger 16s, and they were like, ugh, those are ugly. I took the strap off and hooped in them. Listen, everybody was looking to buy those, but I would clean them after the game. Like, when I got home, I would get a toothbrush, soap, and water, clean them, and then wear them to school as if I did not hoop in those, because I don't think I had. Well, my grandma just was not letting it fly for me to cop multiple pairs, just to have, like, okay, you got to play a pair to poop in, you got a pair to that. Yeah. I would wear as much as I possibly can with the outfits that I had. And then once I hooped in them, it was like, it's for the game. Go for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, my game was so, like, I cut so much. I was clumsy as hell. So, like, I knew that my shoes would be thrashed. So I just always hooped in. Like,
so was that a reason for you to stay away from, like, special drops as a pro? Because I was looking through Getty's images, and I was talking to my Soul Collector buddies and Nice Kicks guys and Nike Talk people. I was like, yo, I got Josh Childress on. You know, any questions? They're like, man, he ain't really hooping anything. And I remember Atlanta Hawks, Fire Red 5s. But anything else you were kind of wearing, like Huarache 2K5, you know, most of the team, not the team rollout, but like the normal regular line that they would put out.
Yeah. I mean, to be frank, they were just more comfortable. Like, you know, and
it got to that point too.
Yeah. And I had foot problems. I can't remember which year it was, maybe my third year. And I started wearing Jordans again. And I was getting, like, you know, the fire red 3s and 5s. And, you know, I started kind of bringing those out. But, you know, for the most part, I was like, I want something that's comfortable, that's responsive. You know, the look is cool, but, you know, I'd rather. You know, I got to take care of my feet. So that was more the reason than anything.
Yeah, I learned the hard way. I broke my foot. I used to switch a pair every game. And it got to a point, I don't have no arch. So wearing a candy pack Jordan 2 to, you know, wearing foam posit to switching to something else, like, you know, constantly. I remember I wore KD4. I was switching every day, like every game. And it was like, yo, the middle of my foot feels weird. And I found I had a, like, literally like a hairline crack straight across. Yeah. I was hooping on that. Like, I was like, oh my God, I got to stick to one pair of shoes. So you're, you know, I mean, like most people dub you as one of the financial literate NBA players. Who taught you your financial literacy?
Man, fear. Basically.
I mean, cause you see these documentaries, you say like, oh, I'm never going to do that when I get drafted. You know, I personally don't know your backstory or like your, you know, obviously he went to Stanford, but like sometimes that's, you know, people still can go against it. Like, oh, he went to Duke and still be like, oh, he ain't got no money now, you know, in a situation. Cause I got a chance to play with your younger brother, in high school. Chris. And when I think about just in general, I never really like guy on a personal level with you, like to know like, oh, well, he buys a bunch of this. I knew about sneakers, like you were really into sneakers, but like sneakers are only like a portion of what guys spend, you know what I mean, when they first come into the league. Like, and when you first got into the league, what was your approach as far as, am I gonna buy me something I've always wanted? Was I gonna take care of my family? Or I'm going to just save this. And like Jason mentioned, you did go to Stanford, but like, did that really help the scenario, or did your parents help you in the scenario for you to be like, all right, I ain't going to be doing this forever. I'm fortunate to make enough money. Now what?
Yeah. You know, so I didn't grow up with much. Right. And so you get drafted, and of course, you know, you want to buy stuff and take care of family and all. And I did that. You know, I remember my first purchase, I bought a watch, and then, you know, a car, and, you know, I did all those things. But I stepped into the game saying, I have a goal. By the end of my first contract, you know, I want to, you know, have saved X amount of dollars and then kind of continue with that goal. And so that was more my approach, was like, you know, first year, can I save $1 million? You know, next couple of years, can I save another X amount of dollars, and then just kind of go that way. From a financial literacy perspective, you know, I'm still learning every day. There's a lot to learn. And I think, you know, the school system and the education system at large, like, keeps us financially illiterate. And I think that's on purpose, if I'm being frank. But you know, it's really about, like, what do you as a person think is important? And, you know, can you figure out a way to create a sustainable life for yourself? Where, you know, I'm not having to, I don't have to work now. I work because I want to. But I think a lot of guys go in really trying to keep up with everybody else, not understanding, you know, taxes, not understanding, you know, that they are not invincible. You know, contracts are massive right now. You know, these guys are making more money than a lot of, you know, these max contracts now are dwarfing what, you know, they used to be. But, you know, with that comes a lot of responsibility, comes a lot of, you know, other things that I hope some of these young guys are understanding. They need to start educating themselves on. And the league has changed. Like, investing wasn't cool back then. You know, it was like, you know, can I pull up in the nicest whip with the, you know, with the spinners on it, and making my chain the hardest. And, you know, it was like all these other kind of material things. Now it's like, you know, which investment am I in? You know, and that's become what's cool, which is dope. I love to see that. But, you know, that's the progression of the league. And so, you know, I just set goals and, you know, tried to achieve those goals yearly. And, you know, thankfully I was able to do that and walk away, you know, comfortably.
Was there a moment when you were playing in your playing career where either you or somebody you knew, you felt like, maybe I went too big right there, and it kind of like, or, you know what I'm saying? Or, man, he's kind of doing a lot, like, that you're like, okay, let me reel this in.
All the time. Yeah, yeah. And myself, I mean, I've had some of those purchases, you know, where I was like, I didn't need that. Why did I buy that? You know, but like, I curved those and got back, got my head back on track. You know, but I had teammates who, you know, have, you know, are in financial turmoil and had financial issues. And like, you look at their behavior, you're like, yeah, I can see why. You know, you were, you know, at Magic City every Monday, you know, spending way more than you should have been spending, and you were supporting, you know, groups of people that you shouldn't have been supporting. And like, it's no different than most of the country, right? I mean, you know, you look at lottery winners, they do the same thing. You know, they just aren't financially literate and don't understand, you know, the power of the money they have. And, you know, people like things. Like, our society is set up, you know, as a marketing machine, you know, and, you know, you scroll down your Instagram feed and you're bombarded with ads now. Like, it's just, it's inevitable. So then it becomes like a discipline, you know, thing. Like, can I stay disciplined? Can I stay focused on, you know, the things that I know I either should buy or should invest in? Because, you know, our society is money driven and marketing driven.
I mean, you hit it on a nail right there. I mean, discipline is the key to like material possessions that you really want. You know what I mean? Like, when you really say, oh, I really want to do this. Okay, how bad do you want it? You know, in that situation, because you can keep spending and never get to it. Or you can be like, and you see somebody like, oh, I remember they started saving 3 years ago and they actually bought it. It's just the discipline of what you really want. Now, I know that you've had your hands in so many different things, tech and businesses and buying this and investing in certain things. Now you're in real estate. How did you get there?
I got there through my scholarship donor at Stanford. He's a real estate beast. You know, he provides probably 100 to 120 scholarships a year at Stanford. So just to put that in perspective, like, you know, those aren't cheap tuitions that he's paying. And he was just a real estate mogul. And so that was like the seed that was planted early on. And from then, I've seen the power of real estate and kind of how it can transform communities. I like that it's tangible. I can go and walk and touch a building, and, you know, and that's powerful to me. And so that's been my area of focus over the last couple of years is, you know, real estate investment. I started my firm, Aspire Group, about 2 years ago. And so, you know, we're working on a number of projects now. We have a proposed now 75 unit project we're going to do in Compton in the next couple of years. So we're going through that process with the city and getting architectural designs done. Talk about architecture earlier. And so that for me is one of those things that I can like be proud of, and I can take, you know, my friends and family and people to and say, yo, we did that for the community. And now you see, you know, 75 families in there, you know, thriving. And so that is very meaningful and very powerful for me. And so that's, you know, a large reason why I started this company.
As a Hub City native, I'm proud of you. Cause like, yeah, growing up, and I mean, you can attest to it, growing up in Compton, it's not, I don't want to give us an excuse and say that we lived in like the toughest neighborhoods in the world. You know what I mean? Because that goes third world countries to Chicago, to wherever you want to call it. Yeah. In the lower income areas, you know, you're faced with adversity. But in Compton, it's like there's so much bright spots that get overshadowed by negative news. And then for you to be a success story out of there and then also come back and give back, you know, because people sometimes say, oh, I'm going to give back or I'm going to do this. And it's not only the financial, the monetizing give back, it's your time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You've done, you know, philanthropy work as well in the city, but also when you think about providing households for, you know, a community, not only one house, but, you know, a 75 home project, you know, in that scenario, like, man, that's beautiful because you once walked those streets. You once drove those streets. You once, you know, probably had friends that lost their lives that didn't get a chance to see this. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's a blessing to make it past 16 where we're from. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I don't think a lot of people see it that way, or people probably maybe breeze by your story because you went to Stanford or because you were a professional athlete at the time. But it's like, everybody didn't make it, or somebody made a sacrifice for you to make it. You know what I mean? Like, those are the situations. Like, and I think a lot of people don't realize that. But man, like, that's awesome to hear, man. That's a wonderful venture, man, for real.
Appreciate it. And that, it won't stop there. I mean, we got that one, but you know, we got plans to do another 2 to 3 of those developments, you know, over the next couple of years. We just got to perform on this one first. You know, but I think that's also a testament to, you know, the mayor that's in office now, right? Mary's Brown. She's young, she's energetic, she, you know, wants to see the change that I think a lot of us, you know, wanted to see in our city for a long time. And so she's making sure that that stuff happens. And, you know, it's a testament to her and you know, her, the other politicians in the area that are actually being progressive and trying to get stuff done.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to get her on the podcast, man. I've been trying to get her on our podcast because I definitely respect what she's doing in Compton, man. And I like to see, you know, young people, you know what I'm saying, young black women running shit, I think is amazing. So,
sure.
Shouts to Pasadena. I hate to say it sometimes, but I'm gonna give her credit. She helping the city. I mean, I grew up with Omar Bradley, so it's a little different. It's a little different hover over there, man. But so we have a question that we ask all our guests, and it's what advice would you give 18-year-old Josh?
Biggest advice would be to invest in yourself earlier. And invest in yourself outside of the sports landscape. So, you know, it's easy to, in school, you're taught to regurgitate information. You're not necessarily taught to apply and kind of, I guess, you know, jump into other avenues. And so that would be the biggest thing. So fail forward, fail often, invest in yourself, and understand that, you know, you have an incredible amount of impact that you're going to put in this world. So embrace it and just be ready for that, you know, for the future.
Great advice.
Thank you.
Well, Josh, man, thank you for joining us today, man. It's been a great conversation. Hopefully we'll have you back in the future to talk about more of your projects and everything else, man. I wish you more success.
Appreciate it, brother. Thanks for having me on, and I wish you guys continued success. I love this platform, and just happy to see you guys doing well.